Well, good afternoon, everybody. And we are continuing our work in the externalization of the hierarchy. And today is the 24th of February. And I'll just bring that up a little bit. Okay, if the voice is too loud, just turn your computer down. And obviously, if it's too soft, turn your computer up. So we have reached program 30, and not sure how long it will last, but we will see. Our segue is about history, and that history, thus is history made, and then this very important statement, history is but the record of some man's cyclic reaction to some inflowing divine energy, to some avatar, or some inspired leader. So from the higher realms come the possibilities. They are seized upon by those who are sensitive to them. They bring out some new form or trend, and civilization is thereby affected. Many people are conditioned thereby, and history is made. Okay. Now, let's go on, because it's a new section. Divine intervention. And it has to do with the doctrine of the avatars, those who descend through compassion, love, goodwill, adherence to the plan, and bring qualities which are deeply needed by those of lesser ability. And this descent is for no selfish reason, nor is it for the reason of self-improvement. The descent is simply according to the need of those who await greater spiritual growth and possibilities. And there are all manner of avatars, all the way from racial avatars, planetary avatars, interplanetary avatars, which are solar systemic, extra systemic avatars, cosmic avatars, and this is the way the Universal Logos continues to give of its own nature to those emanations who have gone forth from itself, and who really are itself. And on their path of return, they need these gifts, the gifts of the spirit, as it were. In considering the subject of avatars, I would like to point out that, from the standpoint of mankind, at his present point of evolution, avatars are of two kinds. And this is from the standpoint of mankind, you know. Obviously, even our solar logos has a kind of avatar which ministers to its needs and beyond and beyond. Avatars are of two kinds, as might be expected, when the consciousness of humanity is subject to the control of the pairs of opposites. Well, maybe. Can it be that not all avatars are good? Let us see. Number one, those avatars who are the embodiment of the angel of the presence, whether that presence is the soul in man, the planetary logos, some extra planetary entity, some cosmic being, or some expression of cosmic good. So these are certainly the positive avatars who lift out of form and into the subtle worlds and into higher vibratory realms, into spirit. All right, that. Now, this is an idea that is, well, actually if Bismarck was an avatar, representing materialism and cosmic evil, as it seems to indicate. Let us see. those avatars who are embodiments of the dweller on the threshold. Whether that dweller is the human dweller on the threshold, planetary forces of materialism, or some aspect of cosmic evil. All right. So, you know, you kind of wonder about, Bismarck was this, we are told. At least we are told that. But what about Hitler? Was Hitler a great representative of this dweller? It certainly seems to be the case, but let's see if something further is said. Let me attempt to make this analogy a little clearer. Just as in the case of the individual man, there comes a point in his life experience when the angel of the presence is sensed, known, seen in the chamber of initiation, and recognized as the revealer of divinity. So in the history of the race of men, some great illumination may come. Revelation confronts the aspirant. Revelation confronts humanity. God is known within the human heart. God is known by mankind. The recognition of divinity in its various aspects, varying aspects, is naturally a progressive one, each stage in each life bringing its own revelation of the beauty of divinity and the glory of light more truly and clearly before the disciple. So this is the positive side. And these are the avatars whom we importune for realizing that they have come, with whom we seek to align our consciousness and our energy system. Similarly, there come cycles wherein the dweller on the threshold appears and confronts the aspirant, challenging his purpose and progress and blocking the door which leads to expanded life and liberation. The dweller challenges the freedom of the human soul, so it is also in the life of a nation, a race, and humanity as a whole. And, you know, in a way, there have been in the 20th century and even now those who seem to be representative of the selfishness, personal selfishness, and of the dweller of humanity. This is happening. And we might say that it is possible for the individual to rise to the challenge. It is possible for humanity to recognize the challenge and rise to it. And between all of these, it is possible for a nation to recognize the challenge and rise to meet it. And we can hope that that is what can occur. It did not occur in the case of Hitler, at least the challenging elements were overpowered by the forces which were, by the representatives which were conditioned by these deeply negative materialistic forces of form. Now, the angel of the presence indicates divine possibility, reveals to the attentive disciple the next step towards liberation which must be made, and throws light upon the immediate stage of the path to light, which must be trodden. In that light we shall see light, so it is said. And so does the avatar who reveals the lighted way to humanity. I'm thinking of the motto of the United States, which I discussed briefly last night in a broadcast, I light the way. And an example should be set by that nation if it can overcome the predictable challenges to its emergence which the lords of form throw in its way, the forces of obstruction. So again, always we have two ways to travel. In the white magical process, there's always a choice to be made. And I'm beginning to see that Libra rising into prominence in the planetary horoscope is really going to give humanity a choice regarding whether to follow the angel of the presence, which I consider as much of the solar angel as can be absorbed within the egoic lotus of the individual or of a larger structure, and the on the opposite side, the negative tendency towards imprisonment in form. Right now, even now, many of us are presented with this choice. The forces of destruction that wish to see chaos in the life of humanity are hard at work. Climate change is being denied. Dictators are being praised. The rule of law is being challenged. Democracy is being ignored or considered to be an impediment or some kind of nuisance, something to be cast aside in favor of the strongman mentality. All that I've mentioned here is on the negative side. So this is the angel of the presence. I don't think he oftentimes discusses the difference between the angel of the presence and the solar angel. My impression is that the angel of the presence is that fragment sent forth into a higher form, such as a causal body, and there takes up its residence, representing the greater solar angel. And this angel of the presence introduces whatever life it is, and it's going to be a self-conscious life eventually, to the essence, to the monad. The dweller on the threshold, on the other hand, here, summarizes in itself the evil tendencies, the accumulated limitations, and the sum total of the selfish habits and desires which are characteristic of the material nature of the disciple, and that disciple can also be a nation, that disciple can be humanity as a whole. And the whole warring 20th century saw a battle between humanity's dweller, the evil tendencies within, represented by certain nations and prominent individuals, and on the other hand, the angel of the presence, representing the divine inherent possibilities in humanity. The angel of the presence indicates the future possibility and the divine nature, and so does the avatar. Yes. That is something we just have to, it's very simple, we have to contrast these two tendencies and realize they are both operative now. And that's what he's doing. He's contrasting them in these sentences. The dweller on the threshold indicates the past with its limitations and evil habits, and so do the avatars who from time to time appear as the embodiments of evil and of the lower nature of mankind. And my brother, they do appear from age to age. We're told the cyclic sons of peace seem to be more on the side of the divine avatar, revealing divine possibilities, and the recurrent sons of war on the side of the dweller, representing Mars, and Mars is really the entire dweller. There's quite a battle going on between Earth and Mars, I think we can see. Mars is not a sacred planet, and it does represent the whole personality and all the lunar lords and the great lunar lord we call the personality. So if we went here to a treatise on cosmic fire and we went to page 1082 will do, we would see the cyclic suns of peace and the recurring suns of war. And we don't know those cycles, and it's probably better that we don't. But we seem to have recently experienced the influence of the recurring suns of war. They were driven back to a great extent, not exclusively, not entirely. And let us hope that according to prophecy, at least as prophecy indicates, a period of peace under the cyclic suns of peace is emerging. Not the soporific peace, you know, the peace of those who are asleep in consciousness, not that peace, but a greater, a higher peace that has to do with the will of the deity. Well, and now he compares it to the individual, because what is true of the individual, although not in exact detail, is true of the greater life and still greater lives and still greater lives. And a holographic principle exists wherein the greater is reflected in the lesser. And when the lesser is studied, there are features of the greater that are indicated. So we are, we have been confronted with representatives coming forth from the impulse of cosmic evil. The six leaders in the East and six leaders in the West, they do not materialize per se, but they have their representatives, and the six men surrounding Hitler and Hitler himself were those representatives, and Hitler himself was in a certain sense avataric, at least it seems to me so, of these lords of evil, wicked pride and hateful lust. And Bismarck led right to that. Was there an heir, a lesser kind of avatar to Lincoln, who was the balancing racial avatar to Bismarck? Maybe FDR. Or at least that's the tendency, you see. And FDR would have been, as just as Hitler was, a leader millions of years ago in the great battle of Kurukshetra in Atlantean times. It's amazing the continuity. And you contrast the quality of the two men. Well, there's a pair of twos. You contrast Lincoln with Bismarck. I think they were born just 4 years apart. And Hitler and FDR were born just a few years apart, and they paralleled each other. We haven't had anything like that, anything like the quality of FDR in the United States presidency since that time. We haven't necessarily had evil men, though some have more tendency towards evil than others. And some have been well-intended, but none of them recently had the power of an FDR. Some cycles in a disciple's life present one aspect of a confrontation and some another. Okay? In one life, he may be entirely occupied with fighting the dweller on the threshold or with orienting himself to the angel of the presence and permitting the divine conditioning energy to flow into him. Let's mark that. And we can trace what we think may be happening in our own case if we are sufficiently developed to actually be facing a kind of dweller. So there is an ongoing confrontation over the course of development of a human being, and in some lives it is acute. Let's just say that when Scorpio is very prominent, the acuity of the conflict can be intense. He may be succumbing to the influence of the dread sum total of his evil and material desires, or he may be drawing gradually nearer the angel. In other words, trying to see what phase of this life-to-life confrontation the human being may be participating in. But, and this is the point of importance, it is he himself who evokes one or other of these manifestations. He himself, and by that we mean the disciple. Between. It is he himself who evokes one or other of these manifestations. We have a choice. We are the disciple positioned between the higher and the lower. That which we have left behind, and which is of a lower rank, and that which we can anticipate as a possible spiritual unfoldment, or a being who leads to spiritual unfoldment, such as an angel of the presence, we stand between. So it is with humanity. The call of humanity's soul or of humanity's material nature must evoke a response, and thus an avatar can manifest, well, especially when the battle becomes acute. As it is in the life of a human individual at certain times, certain decisive times, when crisis, tension, and perhaps emergence can occur. It is the magnetic appeal or the massed intent of the disciple or of humanity which produces the manifestation of the avatar. It is the magnetic appeal or the massed intent of the disciple or of humanity which produces the manifestation of the avatar at the 11th hour after all has been offered along the direction of correct invocation. Then the supplementation can come forth and will come forth, and the saving energy will arrive. In a sense, although he tells us that the solar angel is not really an avatar, because there is much that the solar angel gains from the experience of supervising the human, so that is part of its motive. Nevertheless, there are many ways in which the response of the solar angel to the correct kind of invocation and to the expenditure in the line of good of all that a man can expend or spend is that solar angelic response is avataric. In other lives, the disciple may simply swing between the two poles of his being with no conscious effort, no direct confrontation, and no clear understanding of life purpose, and so does humanity. So DK is absolutely drawing a parallel here between the process of the individual and the process of humanity as a whole. And maybe, you know, we might say when Libra is prominent, this swinging may occur, when Scorpio is prominent, the battle is on. And I think we can see why, you know, Scorpio is the warrior. It's characterized by that powerful Ray 4, and it has Hercules connected with it, Ray 1, you know. And Libra maybe has not yet made the decision, or has not induced in the one that it conditions a decision. Well, we're heading into a Libran period. And the interesting thing is we have been in the Scorpionic period. A great war has been fought, and even though we seem to be moving counter, or at least clockwise, Libra may be the indicator of the peace that is to be brought and the responsiveness to Shambhala, the true center of perfect peace. So here are the parallels, you know, in the lives of the individual and in the lives of, well, the life of humanity. And we have to see where we are as individuals and make a judgment about where humanity may be. Okay, eventually, however, there comes a life wherein the disciple is confronted by both the dweller and the angel simultaneously, and a major conflict of his experience takes place. You could almost see this astrologically if Venus, the indicator of the angel, were opposed Mars, the indicator of the dweller. You could perhaps see this with a Scorpio and Taurus opposition, or maybe squares would be sufficient, but the planets representing the higher and those representing the lower will be in tense relation. And Pluto also should be considered. If Pluto opposes Venus, if Pluto opposes the Sun, if Mars and Pluto are together, Mars, Pluto, and Saturn, for instance, it would be a lethal fight against the higher principles, but perhaps the higher course of action, the higher choice would prevail. So we are so far on page 293. Yes. Divine intervention. Okay. Avatars from two directions and leading in two directions, and human beings as representatives of these directions, and being therefore racial avatars, if they are strong enough and command enough attention and wield enough power. So the contrast goes on, and a choice must be made. He may fight against a very insistent temptation. Temptation can be the demand of the lower aspect of the nature, and he'll be fighting with the dweller, trying to orient himself toward the angel of the presence, so that divine energy can flow into him, but he's not yet successful. In other lives, he may be swinging. And in other lives, of the kind we just considered, eventually there comes a life wherein the disciple is confronted by both the dweller and the angel simultaneously, and this is really a major conflict. I'm recalling there was a disciple, he was a Taurus, and he had a lot of Libra and Leo in his nature, And he was told to seek out the good company of men, presumably rather than so many women that he was engaged with. And he was there in DK's group, because not because of his particularly advanced position, but because in a previous life he had made a tremendous sacrifice on behalf of DK. And the master says, we as the masters, he says this in various places, we are not ungrateful. And so he was, that sacrifice secured for him the position of being included in DK's group. Now, he was a Taurus this time in the terms of the sun sign. In the next life, he would be a Scorpio and face the tremendous experience of Scorpio, as DK seemed to indicate, perhaps the second initiation. So all the energies are presented logically and at the right time for the right kind of step to be taken. And the important thing for all of us is to realize what step it is we are taking. We don't have to know with absolute precision, but in general, we have to know. And if we are trying to help others, we have to have a pretty good idea of what kind of step they too are taking. In this case, we see DK as a master psychologist. He's writing amazingly insightful letters. One can only wish one could do the same for others, and maybe one day it will be possible. So eventually comes this life where it's a dual confrontation. And that will have to be some very intense experience when one is being pulled in two directions and the disciple is, as it were, rent, torn apart by those two tendencies. And, you know, it's such a opportunity for the Arjuna within each one of us to step forward and to cast the decision on the side of righteousness. But I guess it's only if we experience what it's like to fail and to have accepted the lower possibility that we build up the courage to choose on behalf of righteousness, which is the unknown. I'm recalling Joan of Arc in prison. And basically, they say, well, if you'll do this and this, we won't execute you, but you may spend the rest of your life in the prison. And they gave her women's clothing, because she had been accustomed to, in her commanding position, I think a lot of Leo and Capricorn in her chart, to wear men's clothing. And she did indeed change to the women's clothing and began to see whether she could act out that role. But by the time the jailers came to her in the morning, again, she had made her choice. She was in the men's clothing. She had reassumed her old heroic role. And for her, the die was cast. It is, it's kind of like taking the fourth initiation along the sixth ray. It seems that is what she did. Militant, extreme, dramatic, a great example to others, so that her image and what she did and how she led battles against the English survived for centuries as an inspiration for France. The fourth initiation has to be a dramatic enactment. And by the death of the fourth degree initiate, a permanent good has to be offered to humanity, a permanent good of an inspiring nature, as in the case of the Master Jesus, I suppose as in the case of Krishna, as in the case of Father Damien, a great dramatic presentation of what it means to choose the good of the spirit and soul over all the possible more comfortable choices tending towards the preservation of the personality. So anyway, this major conflict occurs, and I've indicated astrologically how one might find it. It doesn't mean that when you look in a chart and you see it, it's necessarily occurring in the life of the individual to whom the chart pertains. But if the individual is judged as a very high individual and has shown in life that this possibility could exist, then we might be able to see the planetary arrangement as indicating it. I did notice, you know, that in the lives of a number of fourth degree initiates, or those who were said to be passing through that degree, Uranus was in the sign Scorpio. Sir Thomas More, Sir Francis Bacon, Krishnamurti, all with Uranus in Scorpio. The only one I'm not sure of there is Bacon, but I think it is so. I guess, you know, what one would do then is check it and see whether it is so, you know. And here is the possibility of doing so. Of course, we do have Moon in Scorpio today. Maybe that's appropriate. Open and Princess. Okay, well, let's see. Let's see if Bacon will do it. Maybe not, and we'll do it this way. Bacon. Sir Francis, and there we are. And Sir Francis. And let's see if I'm correct. I am. It is Uranus and Scorpio. It was so in the case of Thomas More, the man for all seasons, I think an Aquarian, and lots of Aries, you know, and he went through that fourth degree. And I think St. Paul went through the fourth degree in the incarnation that we are most familiar with, and then later, as Hilarion, went through the fifth degree. And definitely in the chart of Krishnamurti, it is to be found. So that's one indication that seems to show up. It's Scorpio is the great battle, and Uranus is the transcendence, and the ability to put to death and to see to the rising of the energies into the spiritual triad, because Uranus rules the migration of energies. And look at how much, I mean, I know it's a little sidetrack here, but look how much of this Aquarian energy we find. Aquarius rising, Sun in Aquarius, Mercury in Aquarius, fifth ray coming through Aquarius, and apparently the Moon in Aries. So this was the chart of a very great individual who is now our Maha Chohan. And we, all of us, we have to learn to pass through these deaths It's kind of a relinquishment, as DK said, that love and light and power, or light and love and power and death, fulfill the purpose of the coming one. Death as relinquishment. So it is today in the world, says the Tibetan, the spiritual and the material are in conflict, and humanity itself is the battleground, we might say, humanity, the disciple, becoming humanity, the initiate. Again, a correspondence to the doctrine of the avatars can be seen in the disciple's individual life. See, always the great chain of hierarchy, with one hand below and one hand above, is operative. If we help, we are helped. And we extend ourselves below and are helped from above. It's the law. So, in this case, another correspondent, when he has achieved right desire and has made a true effort towards correct orientation, then when the conflict between good and evil is at its height, there comes a moment when he demands more light, more power, more understanding, and liberation to take his next step forward. Now, you know, we're told about St. Paul in relation to the fourth ray that his famous statement is applicable in the midst of the conflict, ray four, having done all to stand. And that's it. They demand that you expend yourself according to the measure of the resources which you have at your control, at your behest, and then, having done all, to stand. And as I said, I believe he was passing through the fourth initiation, and when he made up his mind to go to Rome, and he knew probably that execution of some kind awaited him, it was a bit like the Christ turning his face towards Jerusalem, and Master Jesus knew that execution awaited him, and the Christ was going through still greater initiation, which really occurred in the Garden of Gethsemane, and not this time on the cross. I think his fourth initiation took place as Krishna when he was killed by the arrows of his enemies in an earlier period, maybe 5,000 years ago now. So, when you spend yourself completely and all your resources have been oriented towards the good and you have sacrificed them on behalf of the good, it creates a vacuum and you can demand more light, more power, more understanding, and liberation to take the next forward step. Now, of course, none of us is really there, but we can apply it in our own way, given the expenditure of what we have and the need for greater life. So, there is a sequence that relates to the acquisition of money and its use, demand, take. It's not demand, use, take. It's used, it's emptying the bowl, it's creating the vacuum. Then you're allowed to demand, then the descent, the supplementation, the avataric descent will occur, and then you can take and must take. You can't use and demand and then ignore the gift pouring forth. So, going on with the Tibetan, when he can make this demand with firm intent, and can stand steady and unafraid. And there's the keynote of the fourth ray, or a very important word, steadfastness. After so much back and forth, finally, steadfastness, having done all to stand. response will inevitably come from the very presence itself, and even from the monad via the triad, because the monad is involved in that fourth initiation, and there a more direct connection with the monad than ever before is established, even though one begins to access it to some degree at the third initiation. So the will is involved here, as we can see, steadily standing in spiritual being with firm, that's Vulcan, firm intent, and we do know that Vulcan is involved with the fourth initiation, probably having itself a fourth degree, fourth ray monad, at least on one monadic level. There are two monadic levels, you know, the monadic plane and the logoic plane. So having this fourth ray connected with it, the steadfastness of the fourth ray eventually is aided and abetted by Vulcan. At least that's my estimation of it. So when he can make this demand with firm intent and can stand steady and unafraid, response will inevitably come from the very presence itself. A manifestation of light and love and power will stream forth. Recognition of need has then evoked response. And that's always the way it is, according to occult law, if we have the upward tending soul. Now, I suppose there is, as always, some kind of opposite bestowal. If, after all, we can have avatars from the negative side, then we can have a response from the negative side, which helps the errant individual go deeper into evil. Not very pleasant prospect, and certainly one filled with future pain and suffering. But after all, we are one being forever, and whatever the tiny experiences of the emanation of any universal logos, they are ultimately our experiences, and there's no separating ourselves from that. We are not any kind of separated, fragmented, ring, pass, and knotted being through eternity. We are the one life. And do we gain? I mean, it's a question, do we gain from our previous experience? Well, I think the only previous experience we have from universe to universe is the experience of the one. So there seems to be a fresh start with every universe. We have such limited, encapsulated vision, estimation of what identity is. And the whole idea that we can be both one and the many is easily spoken, but not easily realized. So a manifestation, and maybe I can call it an avataric manifestation of light, love, and power, will stream forth. And always true need will be answered if there has been true expenditure of all the needy one has to put in the right direction. So maybe that's why DK says, when attempting to evoke our generosity, he says, give until it hurts. And that will mean a real relinquishment has been taking place, and a vacuum has been created, and a higher energy will, as we're using this word, avatarically flow in and supplement the individual with greater strength, power, understanding, light, you know. It will flow in. Recognition of the need, says the Tibetan, has then evoked response. The conflict ceases. The dweller departs to his own place. And that's interesting, you know, it's like a reabsorption into a reservoir. Into a reservoir. The path lies ahead clear. The path stands clear. The jungles of illusion dissolve in flames, and the path stands clear. The path ahead lies clear. The disciple can move forward with assurance, and a better life dawns for him. If he goes through this process of really facing the two simultaneously, he's a bit like Janus, the two-headed god, and he can look in two directions simultaneously, and finally, like Arjuna, he chooses the correct one, even though it hurts, because he feels like he's relinquishing something of his nature. And in the Battle of Kurukshetra, there was this relinquishment. Both sides were of his family, as it is allegorically spoken. I think there's a huge long movie of about 9 hours or something on the Mahabharata. Might be something to follow that film and see what the what is indicated of a spiritual nature. Well, what is true of the disciple? Okay, so it is for humanity. A demand arises to the very gates of heaven. Heaven being, in a way, the hierarchy and the spiritual triad of humanity. The massed intent of humanity is that evil must end, as in the second of these great invocations, very strongly expressed, and a better and truer life become possible. At the moment of greatest tension and of difficulty, the demand goes forth, response comes. The avatar appears and light pours in, making the way clear. New hope awakens and fresh determinations are made. Strength to establish right relationships streams through the body of humanity, and mankind emerges into a more spacious life. The ring pass knot expands, conditioned by truer values. A fusion becomes possible between the outer world of daily living and the inner world of spiritual realities. A fresh influx of love and light is possible. So, let's just say all the benefits are here listed of carrying this through the right way. But there must be the very first law of the soul, the will to sacrifice, must be present. And you must have spent yourself entirely. Okay, after having spent itself entirely. Humanity was in late 1942 at the end of its rope, and had spent all. Thus, the response from the Lords of Liberation. So, in the hour of extremity, the demand rises to hierarchy, or into Shambhala even, because there are all these different heavens, you know, and Shambhala itself is one of those heavens, as long as we define heaven differently than a place of rest and wish fulfillment. The massed intent of humanity, even, you know, now and then, is that evil must end and a better and truer life become possible. And certainly in the higher realms, the capacity exists to meet that demand. At the moment of greatest tension, this is something we all have to remember, really. At the moment of greatest tension and of difficulty, the demand goes forth, response comes, the avatar appears, and light pours in, making the way clear. All these good things happen, very beautifully articulated here. New hope awakens and fresh determinations are made. Strength to establish right relationships streams through the body of humanity, and mankind emerges into a more spacious life, conditioned by truer values. So that hierarchy must be invoked, and it will be under dire necessity, which is imminent. I suspect that that is the law, that humanity must, having done what it could, invoke hierarchy. A fusion becomes possible between the outer world of daily living and the inner world of spiritual realities. A fresh influx of love and light is possible. And it's obvious that we will need this shortly. And humanity must be open to the invocation which it has set in motion. Yeah. Okay. It might be pointed out that adequate tension in the life of humanity has been reached. Is it true now? Well, it certainly was true then. Adequate tension for invocation followed by the response, which is evocation, it has been reached. The angel of the presence and the dweller on the threshold are at grips. Is Jacob wrestling with the angel before the ladder that leads to heaven? Jacob then would have to be the dweller, wouldn't he? The angel of the presence and the dweller on the threshold are at grips. You see, in one respect, the dweller is the strengthened personality, even a very worthy personality, but it's not the angel. In other respects, the dweller is the accumulated evil of the past. I suppose it's much more dangerous when a good, strong, rightly oriented personality, which is still stuck on itself, wrestles with the angel. It's one thing to identify evil and say, this must be defeated, but when the strengthened, purified, competent personality has become the dweller, the decision is more difficult. It's like the rich young man, you know, the causal body was the opposite of the way of the Christ toward relinquishment. But the causal body was not bad. In fact, it was very good. So the discrimination required was more difficult. So the angel of the presence and the dweller of the threshold are at grips, and humanity stands at its darkest hour. Well, I think what I'll do is I'll just make this an hour long because there's much more to come, and it's one of those days when I could be called away at any moment. So basically it's 2:95, so it's 2:93 to 2:95. That's what we're dealing with. Just a couple of pages, really, on divine intervention. And I will set this in motion and see if I can possibly work on. So this is number 30, and it's 1 hour approximately. 1 hour, and we're page 293 to 295, and the day is the 24th of February, and we don't have 282 anymore, and we'll begin on number 31. We don't know how many hours, and it will be from 295 on, and it will be whenever it will be. Maybe soon, hopefully. So, always duality is the theme, because in many ways, this is a book about war and the choices that have to be made when the war of the angel and the dweller take place in the individual and in a nation and in humanity itself. So we're learning about this battle, and also in the book Glamour, A World Problem, we learn still more. All of us have fought with the dweller, or an aspect of it, or will do so. There is no escape on this planet of redemption, on which we have to become adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. Okay, friends, I'll be back as soon as I can, and study hard and absorb, meditate, and apply. Meditation, study, and service. And I'm sure that as we apply what we know and what is drawn forth from us in any moment of recognized need, our ability to serve will grow. Okay. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see.